5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. Radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, hello, I think I've broken the finger. Hello, Xtine is there. Are you there? Hello?
I am.
Oh, for God's sake, joining woman. Come on. Tonight is a different show. It is the new Panic Room episode 150. It is the something of, I think it's still bloody July, 18th of July, 9:30 Central, and it's just me and Xtina tonight because everyone hates us. So there's that. I know. UX, but I always want to let the listener know that you you are there, and it is a special show.
I am.
It is a special show. Yeah. You know, we're going to have some fun of some japes. I think there's going to be some japes and some frippery. So, but before we do, we need, it's not a show without this, is it? Hara, Yippee Doo. So, Steve, now you've been officially welcomed. How are you this evening, my dear?
Now that I'm officially welcomed, I am. It's been a week. It's been a week, and it's been a kind of a stressful day, and you know, so it's fun to be here where we can joke around, and I can make a I even was messing up dinner tonight. I put I was making fried chicken, and I put the temperature up too high, and the grease was just like way too hot. So the whole house was smoking.
Excellent.
So, yeah, and well then I had to turn it all the way off to get the temperature down enough to even put the chicken in. So dinner didn't turn out. It did turn out excellent. Wonderful, but the whole house.
I think most of our we were going to eat later actually, but my daughter suddenly announced she's she was hungry, so we sort of had a last minute sort of, and it was all mostly microwave. Everything was dinged,
so there was that,
which kind of worked for me. So, so here we are, and I'm bored now, so I think we should, so good night.
Yeah, right, good night.
You know, it's funny, we've been saying this for, how long have we been going now, nearly 3 years, we've been saying this for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, let's do a show with just the two of us. And I'm going to start off with a joke, actually, here we go. Bit topical and probably offensive, but here we go. What has 200 legs and one pubic hair?
Okay, I don't know. Tell me.
The line for a Jeffrey Epstein party.
Wow.
You don't get that. I don't get it.
I was going to pretend like I did, but I really don't know.
You don't know. Oh, do you know? It's pearls before swine. It really is. Pearls. Hopefully our listeners will grasp it. But it's been a week for another week for the Trump master. He must wake up every morning and wish he hadn't. You know, it's like, oh, for goodness sake. You know, just, well, how many more? You know, if I was reading an article earlier today, obviously with the Mueller report, and he thinks it exonerated him, even though Mueller said categorically this does not exonerate him. There's another 12 investigations ongoing.
Wow.
And that's not including these new allegations of alleged child abuse, I guess, having sex with underage girls and whatnot. And he's just a horrible, grubby little man, you know. It's just, you can imagine, you know, that they'll be waiting for him. The cops will be waiting for him on the day that he leaves office. They'd just be sat just waiting with handcuffs, right? Just straight to prison, Mr. Trump. Off you go.
You really think so? Yeah.
I hope so, because he's, I don't know, some of this shit's got to stick, surely.
Yeah.
There's no way it's all made up. It's absolutely impossible it's all made up.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I don't watch the news, and I wait for Thursday night to come on the show, so you will, you know,
well, you
keep
need,
me up to
you
date.
Need to be, you know, I mean, but then you kind of, you know, my topical jokes just fall flat with you, because you just don't understand
them. They do.
You don't understand them. You should. I many years ago once dated a girl who, you know, she's again quote unquote, I don't watch the news, don't like it, it's boring, and it's like, yeah, this relationship's gonna last then, love, you know, and it didn't. Rather remarkably, it lasted 6 months, and no.
You know, I do feel like a grown up when I watch the news, and it's not that I don't want to watch the news, but I keep such weird hours. After the boat get off work, after the boyfriend get off work, he'd be late, and he would have the news, you know, recorded, and we'd sit there and watch it. But, you know, when it's like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning and you're kind of tired, you don't really care about watching the news, you know, you're just like, it's time for bed now. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I know. It's,
I like to stay informed. I always have done. You know, back in England, I used to get the Sunday Times every week, and it would take, because it was like the Sunday papers here, it was just fat, you know, and they had all the supplements and everything. And it would take me all week to read it, you know, in bits and pieces and what have you. But I like to know what's going on. Although some days, you know, when you see another Trump scandal and something else the asswipe said, you know, this whole thing about telling the certain members of the of Congress to go, others in the Senate to go home, to go back, and you know, one of them actually was born in the same city as his father, and it's just down. I mean, people say, oh, it's not racist. Yes, it fucking well is, to be honest. You know, someone said to me, oi, whitey, why don't you piss off back to England? I'd be offended.
Right.
You know, and if you follow, if everybody in the country went back to where they came from, the Native Americans would have it back to themselves, which probably they'd probably do a damn slight better job of it, to be honest. But there you go. Well, that's something that always intrigued me. I mean, we learned about how, obviously coming from England, how the Pilgrim Fathers set off nobly to conquer America. The fact they were thrown out for being too extreme. They were religious extremists. They were Christian fundamentalists, you know. And they were basically thrown out because I don't think Australia had been invented then. So they're thrown out. Fuck off, Tom. Just go and be pious in America. This whole, I mean, obviously, you know, before there was Christopher Columbus, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this whole thing of going into, it's like okay, so I like the house down the street, yeah? It's a nice big house, bigger than mine. I like it, nice big garden. So I'm gonna get a few mates. So I'm gonna go with my flag. I'm gonna stick my flag in his front yard. So that this belongs to me now.
Yeah,
I claim this in the name of my sovereignty, which is me. Yeah. And obviously this is Texas, and let's see how quickly it is before I get shot. I mean, it's just like for me, it's the same. You know, Columbus. I mean, the Spanish did it all through South America. To be fair, the English did it through pretty much everywhere. You know, in India, a lot of Africa, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we just like this whole, I've stuck my flag there now, so it's mine. It's like, I stuck a little flag in a sandcastle on the beach the other week, and so I now own Galveston. So
that's yours now.
All hail the king of Galveston. But hey, there you go. There you go. I know. Yeah. So, I'm gonna press this button because I've not pressed it for a while, actually. Here we go.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So, pussycat, what is new?
Some things, some really
some
good things.
Some things, very, very good things. Some very, very, very good things.
Do we have new things going on right now? Do we?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking you. I don't know. It's like, yeah. I've had my head buried in writing for the past, God, forever, past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I've sort of lost track of what's going on. But we had a whole batch of books launched last week,
yes,
which was jolly. We had Visceral Vices, which is some awesome poetry. We had one of my favourites in a long time, which was Invasive Species, which is a werewolf book, which is phenomenal. And, excuse me, we had Berserker, Green Hell, from Patricia Pinfold, who is, rather bizarre, an Australian living in England. She actually lives in England, in the same village as my ex-sister-in-law. So there's a little bit of connection there, you know. But, yeah, she's actually living in North Yorkshire. I live in South Yorkshire and West Yorkshire, she lived in North, and East Yorkshire. I lived in everywhere in Yorkshire except North, so.
I have to say, it's
a terrific book.
I have to say, Visceral Vices, I think Sean Chang, I think he's only 19, I think, and
He is a wee slip of a lad.
I first read his writing in one of our anthologies a couple years ago, and I was blown away by how mature he sounds. I mean, he's always so mature.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I first came across him when back in the pre Hellbound Books days.
And he would have been
what, 16 then? So, but yeah, his writing is so incredibly mature.
Really,
it's sickening.
Yep. And it's the same way with his with his poetry. I read that, and you know, I'm a poet, and but I think my stuff is just very. Oh gosh, I hesitate on using certain words because I don't want to, you know, downplay it at all. But it's very in basic terms. It's in everyday, you know, the way that we talk every day is the way that I write my poetry. And Sean's is just, it sounds like it could come out of like a, you know, Shakespearean novel or something. I mean, that I'm like, it's only 19. It's just, it's fascinating. It really is.
I know. It's scary. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how he's, how his career develops over the years.
Yeah, I definitely got to get him on the show.
He should be booked. He should be. Why is he not booked? He should be.
You know what? I'm going to talk to him today.
Get him on there. Get him on there. And obviously, and Carl Johnson as well. We need him. But invasive speech. I know Tricia Pinfold is booked as well. So it's going to be all fun. It's going to be
fun. You know, okay, so normally we talk a little bit about, like, you know, TV shows that we're watching. Are you caught up on The Handmaid's Tale?
Do you know, no, because I told you, I got sort of bored with the first episode. And then Stranger Things 3 came, so I've been binge-watching, I've actually binge-watched all of it, the last three episodes. At the weekend, and wow! Okay, I'm not going to spoil it because I know you're on season one still.
We just finished season one up, so I have to get
what
going.
What did you think to it?
You know, I like it. I love the 80s feel. I think that's I love it when a show does that. I really do. Like even that 70s show, just something dated. I love it. Mm-hmm. I do. So, you know, I love that aspect of it. I love the characters. But, you know, for me, they don't even need the supernatural junk. I'm, like, so fascinated just with the kids and their relationship and stuff. I like that part of it. And the whole, what do they call it? The upside down. Well, I guess not the upside down, but the experiments and that kind of stuff that, you know, it gives me a feel of, the fire starter and the
shop.
Yes.
I watched. I'm not going to spoil the. So in season three, the bad guys are Russians, and again, it's just straight from the '80s. And all the bad guys are Russians back in the '80s, you know. and it is. It's just that wave of nostalgia. Where, and it's not. To be honest, and I'm going to sound old here. It's nice. To see a bunch of kids, they're just not sat around on their cell phones. You know, they're playing Dungeons and Dragons. They're out on their bikes. They're solving mysteries. Although I never solved mysteries when I was a kid. I just used to probably create more than I solved, to be honest. You know, and it is. And the music, you know, all the 80s music. And, you know, I was reading the other day, you know, the detail they went to recreate it, even down to the in season three there's a mall that's featured, you know, the stores, that it's authentic, what would have been around back then. You know, so see the attention to the writing is incredibly good, you know, they say the storyline is almost secondary.
That's,
you know, the characters are brilliant. Yes.
And, you know, that's what I like. I like the more character-driven things than I would.
Yeah.
Like when I remember watching Charmed. I used to really like the show Charmed until I was introduced to, like, I liked Buffy better than Charmed. You know, they're kind of like in the same, like, you know, they're both supernatural things. Because I don't think that they fleshed out the characters too well in Charmed. I mean, if you took the script and you jumbled around their lines, you would have no idea that this was supposed to be Phoebe and this was a, but you know what I mean? And I, you know, on the show Angel, they did such a great job of everybody was so unique and things that you could throw out a line and be like, oh my gosh, that's so, you know, Xander or something like that. And I definitely like the more, character driven stuff. So
I'm the same. I mean, it's funny. I saw a trailer for the Godzilla movie, and it was, oh, for fuck's sake. You know, there was a time I enjoyed, like just CGI things, fighting CGI things, just bores me to tears. And it's just like, no, just don't.
Yeah.
No, don't. You know, I sat through the Transformer movies, and they just absolutely just put me to sleep. You know, and I'm getting more like you say. I like good characters. You know, I think I said a few weeks ago. I watched Welcome to Marwen with Steve Carell, and you know, it had flights of fancy in it, but it was a very poignant story. It's actually a true story. Incredible, you know, and it wasn't CGI stuff. It wasn't monster. It wasn't horror. I mean, it was a you know, it had elements of humour in it, but it was a drama, and it was incredibly well done. You know, I would recommend it. It will make you cry. It was a brilliant, brilliant story. Incredibly well done. So, I'm more about, like you say, the characters and the story now. Although, having said that, I am looking forward to Three from Hell, which is the third in Rob Zombie's trilogy that started with House of a Thousand Corpses. And then there was the Devil's Rejects, and now, even though they were all brutally shot to pieces at the end of the Devil's Rejects, they're all back again, which is great.
Nice,
which is great. So, I do like my blood and guts as well. I saw a movie recently called Apostle, which I think was an independent movie from, I don't know, it was a British or Welsh or Scottish movie. And it was really well done. It was almost like, what was the one? The Wicker Man, but without a Wicker Man in it. He wasn't in it. A guy goes to a remote island. There's a religious cult there to find someone, I think it was his sister or his girlfriend or whatever. It was gruesome as hell. And it had supernatural elements, kept you guessing. It was called Apostle. I don't know where I probably saw it recommended on some site somewhere, and yeah, great. If you like a bit, like a bit of gore with it, something that's not just, you know, your bog standard Bloomhouse jump scare horror.
I do like the jump scare. I really do. I like that. I think it could be like a throne or something. I wanted to, but I haven't yet, but we have it, I think, to watch. You mentioned, what was that movie you mentioned last week? Hereditary? Is that the one?
Have you not seen that yet?
Oh, yeah, we do have it, but for whatever reason, we didn't get to watch it last weekend, so maybe this weekend I can get my way. You know, we joke around every weekend, it's the boyfriend's weekend to pick the movies. I mean, it's not really like that, but I like to joke, oh, it's your weekend again, you know, so...
The movie doing the rounds at Midsummer, it's actually at the theatres now, is actually the next one from is Ari Aster, I think, the director, which I haven't seen yet. I'll wait while that comes out on DVD or pay-per-view. It usually hit pay-per-view first, so but if it's as good as Hereditary, it'll be awesome, because Hereditary is just wow.
I'll have to watch that. Yeah.
Again, it's one of those. It's a bit of a slow burner. It takes a while to get going, but I think it's worth it because you know it's coming, and boom, you know, when it starts happening, it's just all. But for me, the dynamic of the family. I mean, Toni Collette plays the mother, and she's always fantastic. You know, the dynamic, and then seeing it unravel when the you know, I'll not spoil it for you when the things start happening, is tremendous. And of course, you know, absolutely brilliant. You know, there's a big, big clue actually in the title. You know, and I say this, you know, to a lot of authors who we speak to on a daily basis, you know, you think about everything about your book, you know, and okay, you're saying go for a screenplay, movie, whatever. You know, everything, make every word count, including the title.
Yeah.
You know, everything should count.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do know that, you know, sometimes when you're reading a book with a title that you just don't get right away, you know, one of those, and then you get to the point in the book where the title makes sense. That's always a cool moment, you know. I do remember that reading one of Jeff Strand's books. One of the last ones I finished of his, and it was like that where, you know, you had the title of the book, and then it was like, you know, close to the end, and it just, the moment hit me with, I had chills. I did. I was like, that is so awesome. And so I do, that's a cool moment when that happens. The title starts to make sense to you. So.
Well, it needs to, I mean, you know, it needs to be part of the story. It's an important part of the story, you know. And, I mean, you know, Transformers is great because you know exactly what you're getting.
It's probably exactly going to be about Transformers. Yeah.
It could be. Well, it's funny, actually, down Poundland or a dollar store here, you know, they have transforming robots, they call them. Which is obviously shameless ripoff. Yeah, I mean, I think they had sort of Mutant Ninja Tortoises as well, or some such, you know.
Nice.
Which was good. So I tell you what we are going to. Sorry, what? You're going to say something interesting? I doubt it.
Well, have a go. I don't know how interesting this is, but I remember the first time
Probably not very.
Have you seen that? You know the store Aldi's, right? Aldi's. It's like that cheap Save-A-Lot store, you know?
Aldi was posh down where I came from.
That's
where we did our best shopping.
The first time I went into it, I did not know that it was, you know, the cheap stuff or whatever. And everything looks to be like like Frosted Flakes. The box looks like Frosted Flakes. It's the right color. It's got a tiger on it. But it's an off-brand. But it's weird because at first glance, you can't really tell. It's not until you're like, hey, wait a minute. That's not Tony the Tiger. That's, you know, Phil. Or, you know.
Yeah. Phil the Ocelot, Dave Tiger. It's Dave Tiger, I know. I mean, obviously, I get either, you know, they're not too bothered about copyright or, you know, it's different just enough, you know?
You're right, exactly.
Different,
so
just
kind of
enough, which is funny, but hey, if you can get away with it,
exactly.
That's what
okay,
I always
so where
say.
Were we going? That was my interesting story. That was it. So
that was great. You went to Aldi. That's brilliant. That's great. Thanks for that. So are you bored now? Who needs guests anyway? I mean, they just sort of get in the way most of the time.
Well, we
Most
have been talking
time.
For half an hour now, and I'm not bored. So, who needs guests? That's right.
Exactly. I mean, we've got us. I mean, obviously, it's quite clear where the talent lies in this show. So, and obviously, you're in it as well. So, which is nice.
Which is
rather jolly, but it's funny. Again, just I know obviously a lot of people listening are actual, you know, are writers. You know, they want to write, and it must have, at least you know. I follow the groups on Facebook, and we get, you know, at least two or three times a week. You know, we get what can I do to be a successful writer? You know, everybody. I mean, I guess we're all the same when we start. Everybody wants that shortcut, you know.
And the
big secret is there isn't one.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to stop. And I say, I mean, it's funny. I've been working on a couple of heavy writing projects this past few weeks, and it's amazing how you do tend to lose track of A, time and B, everything, really.
When you're really in the zone writing, yeah, definitely.
But it's not so much being in the zone. It's just the physical time. You know, just sitting, and it takes time, you know, to whatever pace you write at. I can be sat there and I've written however many pages, how many words, and look up and it's like lunchtime.
Yeah, it's like, when did that happen? Yeah, you know, we were saying
it was just breakfast time. Where did 3 hours suddenly go, you know?
I think it was last week anyway. We were talking about people who can listen to music while they write. And I know that when I was really in the zone, I could, you know, for me, I had to have the music up really loud. And the cool part was when you know, three or four songs would go by because I had a whole playlist. And, you know, I would just like come out of writing or something and be like, wow, what happened to the last four songs? You know, that was a pretty cool moment. You know, like you had absolutely, you know, that you didn't hear them anymore because you were just so wrapped up in, you know, the world that you were creating. So that is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, this is why I can't listen to music while I'm writing, because I would just be listening to that. You know, yeah. I need silence. You know, I need to be able to come, because as I said before, you know, and it has been said many, many times, I'm so easily distracted. I would. My brain would be tuning to the music, you know. Not, although, as it is now, you know, I'm writing. I what I do listen to when I'm writing is The Dog Across the Street Barking, which is great.
There you go. Yeah.
Which is great. We have a bunch of neighbours here who are just so fucking rude. I just want to go and smash their faces in. You know, they have this, I mean, it seems sweet enough, little dog. And for some reason, when they're around, they put it in a tiny little cage in their garage. Now, bear in mind, this is Houston, and it gets hot. In our garage, actually, is hot. We put some candles in there when we moved, and they've melted. They just are like blobs of white poo now.
Nice.
And they put this poo, they leave the door open like a foot or two, and he just, yep, because obviously he's not happy. And they just, why? I put it in the fucking house, you miserable bastards, you know?
You know, we have, I've said this before, we have five dogs in this house, and three of them are the little yippy, you know, little yippy ankle biters.
Oh, I do not like yippy dogs.
Yeah, you know, you know, we put them outside to do their business, and I have to say, I think we are good neighbors because we don't let them bark. You know, they start barking, they, you know, get a couple barks in, and they're coming back in the house. But, yeah, you know, you do get those.
Well, this one, I mean, it was actually Saturday. It actually woke me up. My daughter, whose bedroom is actually above mine, woke us up 7:30 Saturday morning, yipping. And it was yipping pretty much, I think, till about lunchtime.
Wow.
You know, what do you do? You know, if I go across and say something, you know, we're going to end up having a war with our neighbors. I spoke to animal control and we said, well, unless it's wading around in its own feces, there's nothing more. So it's, seriously, it's in a small cage in the garage and it's barking. So next thing is phone the sheriff because it's a noise nuisance. But what do you do? I just want to go shoot it, to be honest, because it's obviously unhappy.
Yeah, well,
you can't do that either. You know, I'll just go rescue it. She's going to rescue it and just take it somewhere that would appreciate it.
There you go. I remember that in Dexter. Dexter's girlfriend went over and rescued the dog and gave him to other people, the little puppy that was yapping. I remember that in the episode.
We should do that.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So, I'll tell you what, I've been dying to play this, actually. If I can find it. Just play when I want. I'm loving this. I think later, you're going to do 11 questions on there. I think that'd be great.
Awesome.
I would like that. So I'm going to play this. Then we'll probably bring, we are going to bring somebody on, but just because. But let's play this and then we'll bring him on.
I really believe I'd run into it even if I didn't have a weapon.
Nobody knows the system better than me.
Nobody knows politicians better than I do.
Nobody knows. Nobody's better.
Nobody's stronger. There's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am.
I love the First Amendment. Nobody loves it better than me.
Nobody loves the Bible more than I do.
There is nobody that respects women more than I do.
Nobody builds walls better than me.
Nobody's in the history of this country has ever known so much about infrastructure as Donald Trump. Nobody knows that better than me.
Nobody even understands it but me.
Nobody can do it like me.
Which is why I alone can fix it.
I have Ivy League education, smart guy.
I know words. I have the best words.
You're like, I'm a smart person.
It's this. It's not my salesmanship.
It's what?
This. You know what that is? It's the brain power.
I'm getting thousands of letters and tweets that I was right about
the whole situation. I mean, I've been right about a lot of things, frankly. I should be a newscaster because I called it before the news.
I watch your stuff. You know, I'm like a guy with vision.
I have an instinct for this kind of thing.
I'm good at war. I've had a lot of wars of my own. I'm really good at war.
In my book, I predicted terrorism.
It's a rigged system. I think I've done a great service by pointing this out. I was the one that really broke the glass ceiling on behalf of women.
I think I'm doing the military a great favor.
Did a great job in Texas, a great job in Florida.
I truly believe that the first 100 days of my administration has been just about the most successful in our country's history.
It looked like a million and a half people.
Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout.
I understand steaks. It's my favorite food, and these are the best.
It keeps me from running.
Can you believe it?
I love that. And no, Trumpy, I cannot believe it, to be honest with you.
He sounds amazing, doesn't he?
Huh?
He sounds amazing. I mean, just look at all, just listen to all the things that he's amazing at.
He would never use the word like amazing. He wouldn't know that. He's very, very good.
He's very,
very, very good.
Yes.
Nobody's better than me, folks. What a tit, I have to say. With apologies to breasts across the planet. So hey, I say okay. I'll be dying to bring you on. Here we go. Are you there, sir?
Who are we talking to?
You, sir.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you. Give me a difficult one. What movie is that from? Hey, Carlos, it is a delight. What have you got for us this evening?
Work with me, Annie. 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 Lift Keenan while the getting is good. Annie, please don't cheat. Give me all my meat. Ooh-wee. Chocolate for me. Work with me, Annie. It's kitty while the getting is good. Work with me, Annie.
Yay! That was wonderful. Thank you.
Over there, huh?
Thank you. Oh, hey, how are you doing?
Doing okay. Had myself a little rough week. A lot of business stuff, a lot of work stuff, but here we are winding down to the Panic Room Radio Show. Always enjoy it every Thursday. Thanks so much for your entertainment.
Oh, thank you. We like it's the gateway to the weekend. You know, it's like the Friday. You know, one more day and it's the weekend. But
new start,
isn't it? Xena's usually nicely drunk by now, and you know I'm on wind down, so. So there's that. So come on, Carlos. I mean, like I say, we're not having sort of whole official. We thought we'd mix it up this week and just have us and obviously you. Hopefully you play us. In fact, we're going to make you work for it. We're going to make you play something else. But tell us what's been going on in the wonderful world of Carlos Colón.
Well, I've been hearing from our boy who wants to play Nicky Danny. I shouldn't say boy, he's a man, but, you know, I've been hearing from him. He's been working hard trying to build up the budget to get this darn thing produced. You know, he really wants to sink his teeth into the role. Ah, I like that, right? He wants to sink his teeth into the role. And I understand that he's even considering doing the audiobook. So that would be kind of fun, too.
Yeah, we've been chatting to him about that, and again, obviously, as far as the movie or you're planning a TV series, I mean, anything movie related, it just takes so long,
It takes years. It takes years. I mean, the first James Bond novels came out in the early 50s, and the first movie wasn't produced until 1962. So, I mean, that'll just give you an idea. You know, that's how slowly those things move along.
Oh, yeah.
So I might not be alive to see Nicky, but, you know, hopefully someday, you know, somebody will get him out.
Well, hopefully it won't take that long, but you're right. I mean, even from having a script accepted to it finally hitting the screens can be years. I mean, literally, because again, you know, I guess unless you're, you know, Tarantino or Spielberg or some such, you know, we can just, you know, I've had an idea. Oh, here's millions of dollars, Mr. Tarantino, you know. it is difficult. I mean, it takes a long, long time. And the actual making of the movie itself is the easy bit, relatively speaking. It's everything that goes on around it that is just so, as Carlos is finding out now. I mean, if you could find a great, I guess like the Duffer Brothers did with Stranger Things, you know, you find a great studio who, you know, get somebody who will back you and throw money at it so you can make it yourself how you want it to be made, then away you go. But it is a lot of it. I was having this conversation with a guy earlier. When it comes to movies, a lot of it is, it's more who you know.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you talk about the time that it takes for something to go to the screen. Kirk Douglas, in the early 1960s, he bought the rights to the Ken Kesey novel, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it took so long to get it done that by the time they were ready to do it, he was too old, so he gave it to his son to produce.
Yeah,
and his son produced
that,
He produced it, of course. He wasn't the big enough star at the time to do the lead role, but of course Jack Nicholson did such a fantastic job with it in 1975, I think it was. So that just gives you an idea. That, so we're talking about that. That one took probably a good 15-20 years to get out of the screen.
Yeah. I know what a fine film it was as well. I must admit, I saw that film once. I watched it when I was actually at university. It's a year or two ago. And brilliant, brilliant film, incredibly well done, but it was so depressing. I don't think I could sit through it again. It just absolutely depressed me. It stuck with me. It depressed me so much.
Yeah, the ending was very sad.
Yeah.
It was a very, and there are lots of movies like that at the time. Cool Hand Luke was a similar in tone. You know, it's all about just taking that person who has that free mind and just breaking him down until he either conforms or just gives in.
Well,
and that was
fair,
a big
thing
in 1960.
It was supposed to be, it was an allegory of American society at the time, which I guess is kind of poignant even now. You know, anybody, you know, who is a free thinker is hammered down until they're not.
Yeah. And I don't want to get into the whole political things, the whole theme that's going on right now. But yeah, we must allow people to be themselves and to think for themselves. And I just think right now, politically, even on the left and on the right, people are not thinking for themselves. They're just going along party lines, and they say, "Hey, well, you know, everything on the right is wrong, everything on the left is wrong," and it's frustrating because no one comes up with solutions. Why? Because you're just following two paths instead of being individual, like you said, free thinkers.
No, but the problem is as well, I mean, the further to the left you get, the further to the right you get, the less difference between the two. You get to the extremes, and extreme left and extreme right are pretty much the same in their ideologies. And then it's like, I mean, again, it's a bit of a cliche, people comparing Trump to Hitler, but you look at Hitler and then you look at Stalin, who were extreme left and right, and really not a lot of difference, you know? It's just like scary stuff.
Well, I just came from a little trip to Cuba. We were there, Cuba, a month and a half ago or so, and there is a perfect example of free thinking not being allowed. And hey, you think the wrong way, and you could be executed for it. And you know, I'm fearing that we might be going in that direction.
It's scary. You could be right. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, obviously, I came up from England, you know, and to America, you know, land of the free and big opportunities and all the rest of it. And,
I bet you're regretting it now.
Yes. Well, to be fair, I mean, looking at the state England is, I mean, it's literally out of the frying pan into the fryer. You know, it's like, you know, maybe I should have gone to Cuba or somewhere else, but. Yeah, and England is in a jolly old state as well at the moment. So, I think everywhere. I can't imagine. I say maybe Cuba's probably the best place to be right now, or Canada, perhaps Canada.
Yeah, hey, you know, let's look at. If all you needed was a couple of more warmer months, and that might have been paradise, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I like Canada, you know, what about you guys? What's going on there? I hear you have some new books. I'll tell you what, I've been reading Isabel Blackthorne. I'm looking forward now to reading Jerry Gray. I'm trying to keep up with all you guys, you know. Of course, I've read much of Christina. I still haven't gotten to your Zombie Hookers book yet. I'm dying to read that.
It's only a short story, you know. I mean, come on. Yeah, it's better than Christina. I sent her one of my novels 3 years ago. She hasn't bothered.
I gotta set it down for a long crap. I'm gonna take a long crap one of these days here, and I'm gonna read it in just one sitting.
Well, I tell you, if you like doing that, we have an anthology out shortly. It was called the Toilet Zone, and we actually worked it out. Statistically, we worked it out, the average amount of time people spend sitting on the toilet, and all the short stories in it are the right length for a sit down. So I can see it's gonna be a massive hit, because it is. It's literally one poop story. So it'll be good.
Great authors. It's been great stories. I've read. I think I've read all of them now, and they're really good. I can't wait to have the Toilet Zone. Which, you got to admit, that is a cool title right there. I love that.
But to be honest, the idea was Brett McCormick's. We've worked with Brett again, himself an outstanding, you know, schlock horror movie director and writer. We worked with him on. Schlock Horror, funnily enough, our anthology last year, and he's working on Texas Roadkill, and he actually came to us and had this great idea, you know, it's called The Toilet Zone. Brilliant. So of course, me being me, took it that step farther, and I actually did the research, got the statistics for how long it takes people on the toilet, and worked that out to word length. It works out between 3,000 and 5,000 words for a story, depending how long, you know, how long you are on the crapper. I'm looking forward to it hitting the shelves, because I think it'll be a big hit. Everybody likes to have a good old read while they're having a poo.
And you've been rounding up some really good talent. I mean, the guests that you've had on the last couple of shows have been great. I really enjoyed the guests that you've been having.
Thank you. You know, speaking of that, we have me and James are going to be on the Haunted Nights Live pretty soon. Yeah, I have to remind you about that, James.
Why do I not know about that? Nobody tells me anything, girl.
They're coming to us.
No.
There we go. They're coming to us next week. They'll be here on next Thursday, Haunted Nights Live. We got Alistair and Tamara Thorne. So that's going to be exciting. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I know nothing.
We've had them
before. Hey, that's like me in my house. I know nothing. My wife knows everything, you know?
That's how it should be. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, we're going to... it's funny, that new movie is coming out. It reminded me of your book, The Nice Outrageous Concept, though, of your Pete, the first one that I read of yours. You know, mm-hmm. Now you have that one, a crawl about the...
I wasn't that bothered. Oh, another CGI thing. But then I saw it with Sam Raimi. I thought, oh, right, okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to watch that. It'll be good.
We're making plans to go see that this weekend. But yeah, you know, great concept. You know, just like yours, you just have to have that right concept and, you know, it could really work. But so it reminded me of yours. That would be a good repeat read for me. I got a real kick out of that one.
Excellent.
So,
Thank you.
All of you out there in Radio Land, if you hadn't read Pete yet, make sure you do.
Yeah, here. Because my daughter needs shoes, so my daughter needs some. Announced to me today, I need some shoes. So please buy my books, people. Please. I'm begging. I'm not proud.
Yeah.
I'm not proud.
Well, you know, we got to do everything we can to get our word out there. You know, we got to get people to know what we're doing here. You know, it's refreshing work. We don't have to follow the rules over here. And that's what I enjoy about being an independent writer. You know, something, you know, if you were one of those big six publishers, something mm-hmm. you might not be able to do. For example, you've done it, and I've done it with where we've quoted popular songs. I even incorporated the lyrics into my storyline for the second book, Sangre the Wrong Side of Tomorrow. And I was concerned when I submitted to you. I said, they're going to ask me to take that out. But hey, we're independent publishers, so fuck it.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much. I mean, you know, you can bend the rules. It's funny enough, as I was saying, I sort of a bit of a side job ghostwriting for other authors, it is very restrictive. You know, I got to one point I thought I can't do this because, you know, they want this the structure. You've got to write to this structure, and almost literally down to the plan it out by scene. This scene has to be 1,200 words long. This chapter has to be this many words long. And it's almost like, here's the formula, yeah? But hey, you know, it pays the bill, so I just sit there. But then it's nice to be able to, after, you know, do that for some part of the day, but then come back to something of mine where the gloves are off. There's no rules. I can just do what I damn well please. And yeah, I need that.
In your story, Flanagan? Yeah, you spoke a lot about ELO during Flanagan, which, by the way, we were there Tuesday. Awesome show.
How was it? I'm a massive fan.
I gotta tell you, you know, Jeff Lynne is what, 71 years old, I believe it is. He looks and sounds fantastic. You listen to this live performance. And so many people on stage coordinated tight, playing mm-hmm. together. And you know, it's like you think about some of the bands that are out now, even a couple of years ago, the rock and roll bands, you know, they should be embarrassed. They should go listen to something like this and see what real musicians can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we were at the Kiss concert just a couple months ago, and for as old as those guys are, they could really rock. I was, you know, just standing up, you know, cheering. I was tired. I was like, man, mm-hmm. this is a lot of work. And they're still just dancing around and they're getting it. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing, you know. And they sounded good. They sounded so good.
I think it was 1995. Oh, the original group of Kiss got back together, and they toured for the first time, you know, since their original heyday in the 70s.
Yeah,
and
wow.
I went to see them with my wife we had a luxury suite in at Madison Square Garden. And they were older. I mean, you know, they had their bellies hanging out with their open shirts and that kind of stuff. You know, so they were older. The show was so much fun. My wife had never heard a Kiss song except for Rock and Roll All Night, and even though she didn't know the song, she loved it. She had such a good time. Kiss, they are such great entertainers, and they're underrated musicians too. You know, there's a lot of snobbishness going around, but no, they're good musicians too.
Yeah, I saw them. I saw them quite a few years ago here, actually, and went to see the rodeo, and they did a turn there, and they were brilliant. And like you say, Exceeders, right? The old, I've seen The Who, Rolling Stones, Blondie, all these old, and they are phenomenal. They, like Carlos was right, they put the modern bands to shame. You know, you have the cancelling a bunch of shows because they're a bit tired. You know, you've got Mick Jagger, he's 74, 75, and he's still giving it life.
Yeah, 75, I think, yeah.
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 So I can hear the guitar. Can we have another song, Carlos?
Please.
Please. I tell you, Xenia will throw her panties at you if you sing for her.
All right.
If I were wearing any, I would.
I'm going to.
Moving on.
This is going to be a little mellow. It's been a difficult week for me. Had some my mother's having a very difficult time health-wise, and I had just come back from visiting her, so I've been doing a lot of traveling besides my business and going there. And she's not in good shape, but I did bring my guitar there. Actually, I borrowed her guitar. She has one in her house, and I brought it to the room where she was staying. And I did this song for her, which I think is the most, honestly, it's very well known, but I don't think it gets enough recognition for being one of the most beautiful love songs of all time, in my opinion. Because it can be applied to so many situations, to lovers, man and wife, mother to son, father to son to his mother. And so I'm going to do this right now for you. When no one else can understand me, when everything I do is wrong, you give me hope and consolation, you give me strength to carry on, and you're always there to lend a hand in everything I do. That's the wonder of you. And when you smile, the world is brighter. You touch my hand and I'm a king. Your kiss to me is worth a fortune. Your love for me is everything. I guess I'll never know the reason why you love me as you do.
Awesome. That was, I love that
come
song.
Come on, all right.
Absolutely perfect. Absolutely love that song. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry
you've had a rough week, Carlos. It's life happens, unfortunately. I hope everything
life
works
happens,
well.
And we try to cope in whatever way we can. You know, we create, we write, we sing whatever we can. Now that's the wonderful thing about having these. Having these tools available to us, you know, for those of us who have creative minds and hearts, you know, that we have something where we can express what's going on in our lives or what has gone in our lives.
It is nice. Yes, you're right. It's nice to have that outlet. And I guess, you know, sometimes it can be a burden, but, you know, we're so lucky to have that. I've said it before, you know, it took me a long time to realize that not everybody's brain worked the same way as mine. You know, I thought everyone had that. I've always been this, always sort of make brains, always make things up and always make stories up and what have you. And I thought everyone, and then, you know, you speak to people and it's like, you think you don't have any imagination really, do you? You know, it's like, mine's off there just creating all sorts of weird, wonderful things and, people just like, oh, I don't understand why you can do that. Well, you just make shit up. It's not that difficult, is it? And they just can't. People look at you like you're either a mental case or an absolute god. You know, either one. Either one. I'll take what I can get, you know.
Well, it does make me wonder what the people who don't write and don't have the talent or the imagination, what do they do to blow off steam? I mean, you know, James had a bad week, and so he wrote a really cool murder scene. I'm like, yes! You know, so
it's funny. It's one of those things. You're right. Had I not had the week I'd had, it would have been a different murder scene. I thought it was one of these ghostwrites on we had to kill this character, and of course I was given free reign, which they'll probably regret, to be honest with you. But and I thought, what is the most, because the guy that did it, I just want to put, you know, instead of saying the guy's sadistic, I just want to show what he's, you know, he could have finished it like that, but he chose not to. He chose to do it in a particular way that shows the character, you know what I mean? And yeah, it would have been a lot different had I had a super-de-duper week. Again, it's been my little girl, and she's really poorly, bless her. And I'm actually going to patent copyright the phrase water park ear, which is an ear infection that you get from swimming in other people's urine for a day, apparently. But, she's got a nasty ear. We took her to the doctor, so we went to splash that. Yeah, okay, fine. This time of the year, they just get out, steady stream of kids in, bit the water park, bit of water in the ear. She's got this nasty infection, so bless her. So I've had that to deal with as well. And you know, it's like, you know, when you've got kids and if there's anything wrong with them, you feel useless. You know, you can get the medicine, so you just sort of cuddle them and it'll all be magically better, but it isn't. I feel like such a bad parent.
Yeah, you know what, and then reverses too. You know, when it becomes parents, you know, like with me this past weekend, you know, you feel useless not being able to help your parent in front of you who is suffering, you know, and that's a very helpless feeling. So I get what you're coming from.
Just being there for them and, you know, them knowing you're there, I think is plenty. You know, it's what you can do, and they know that, which is, like you say, you just want to put your arms around them and just make it all better.
Or you can sing a love song to make Christina swoon.
Yes, you can.
I think Christina needs to go and put some panties on so she can throw them at you for the next one.
Oh, goodness, what a picture.
I will throw my panties at you. I don't mind.
I will make sure I don't.
I have to ask her something as a performer. Have you ever had that happen? Have you had panties thrown at you on stage?
Oh, I'm Sure he has. Millions of times.
Well, put it this way, you know, I performed now for over 40 years now, and there have been moments in my lifetime where I've had offers that I declined. Put it that way.
He's such a gentleman about it, too. Listen to him.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, especially, put it this way, I can see why so many rock stars get hooked on drugs, because they're all offered to you. I remember performing in CBGBs, and I had my choice. I didn't have to pay for anything, you know. I had my choice, but I declined, not only because I didn't want to get involved in any of that, but also the conditions at CBGBs were deplorable. I mean, you know, it's a very romanticized place, but it was really a disgusting place to play.
Oh, it sounds fun. But like you said, I mean, it is, I think at most levels, you know, it's part of the culture.
Yeah.
It is part of the culture.
Yeah.
It's almost expected, which is why, like you say, a lot of, you know, it's killed a lot off, you know, and a lot get hooked on it. And it's almost like a rite of passage. They have to have gone through that.
It's funny, because when I went to Florida this weekend to see my mother at the airport, Newark Airport, they had a CBGB's restaurant. You know, so now the name has been sold, you know. And I remember going in there and saying, like, this is not CBGB's. See, put it this way. If this were CBGB's, you wouldn't be eating food here, put it that way.
Yeah, or if you wouldn't be off the floor. You have to pick all the sawdust out of it. Yeah, we've all been in. But I when I came over here, I did stand-up on the bottom rung of the stand-up circuit for a while. And one of the regular places we used to go, one of my fellow comic friends actually found a tooth, a human tooth, on the table. And he was just like, we just sat there, we were supping on our beers, waiting to go on. I said, what's it? Oh, shit, and it was literally a human tooth on the table. It's like, what?
Oh, no.
then you'd go up and do your set, you know, knowing there's a human tooth on there. It's like, okay, that's jolly then.
Yeah, it's like you want the story, you know, how did the tooth come, you know, to be there. I would have wanted the story, definitely.
it was one of those places where the last thing you would ever do is say, whose tooth is this? Just...
Wow.
I remember we're going back probably maybe about 45 years or something like that. I was walking in the Bronx, and I was crossing the street, and I just looked down the ground. You got to look down when you walk around in the Bronx in those days. Because those days, that was before the pooper scoopers. You know what I mean? So there was dog shit everywhere. So you know, I looked at the corner there, and I said, "What the hell is that?" And I got closer, and it was greenish, and then I saw the damn thing was a finger. There was a finger.
Oh wow!
Finger on the street. it was a severed finger on the street. I'm like, what the hell?
Wow.
You know,
if that had been me, I would have kept it. I would have kept that.
You know, you talk about material to write a story around, you know, but there was a severed finger on the street. Never forget that.
That is fantastic. That is the beginning. In fact, funny enough, what was it called? Blue Velvet, the David Lynch film, actually began with a severed ear, if you remember.
That's correct. That's right. That's
there you
right.
go. What a great big
good,
David
good
Lynch
movie.
Film. What a movie. Dennis Hopper's version of Roy Orbison's
right.
Dream was an absolute.
That's right.
with
the inhaler, there it was the oxygen.
Yeah. Absolute classic. What a good. I'm gonna have to find it. I'm gonna have to watch that movie again because it was brilliant. David Lynch, just phenomenal movie maker. Absolutely.
I like David Lynch when his weirdness serves functional to the storyline. I think he got away from that and it started just being weird to be weird. But Blue Velvet was Blue Velvet, and to me, the first season of Twin Peaks was David Lynch at his best.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, like you say, I think Twin Peaks it got a little bit, weird for weird's sake, and it just tried to twist it too much. But almost like it was just eking it out a little bit. It should have just stopped with one season for me. But and then Mulholland Drive as well was it was overly. Yeah, overly weird for me. It didn't need to be.
It was two great stories that were disjointed.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't work, I'm afraid. It didn't merge very well.
It's funny because you mentioned that, or I don't know how David Lynch came into the conversation, but I used David Lynch sort of like an inspiration for a lot of the parts in the sequel of Sangre, the Sangre Part 2, The Wrong Side of Tomorrow. Since you both have read it, I can say like the scenes inside the theater, things like that, some of the dream sequences. I thought of David Lynch because, David Lynch just creates this whole uncomfortable feeling, and I love that about him.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. The first Lynch film I saw was Eraserhead. Again, back when I was at university, and one of my flatmates said, you've got to see this. And that was that was like an acid trip. It really was. I mean, what a depressing, dour, but incredibly visual film. It's uncomfortable. I mean, hit the nail on the head there. It does make you feel uncomfortable, which is good. To evoke that sort of emotion in someone reading is phenomenal.
If you make the audience uncomfortable and you keep it along the thread of the storyline there, it works wonderfully, and that was he was great at that. When it stopped working as part of the storyline, it was like, okay, now you're just being weird.
I felt that with Chuck Palahniuk. I used to love his books. I did, even though they were really strange and odd, but it seemed to me like the last few, maybe the last three or four or so, have just been like weird for weird's sake. And it's like, I don't know about this. Like, I just couldn't get into them like I could some of his older stuff, but I don't know if it's just maybe him getting old or something, but just couldn't do it. Although I still kept trying though. I did. I think I stopped at like Damned, I think it was called. Damned. I couldn't do Damned or Doomed. No.
Yeah. I think I read one of those, and it was, not brilliant. But then, you read like Fight Club, and you read, I think, Haunted, and absolute classic Haunted. Polonic. Uh-huh. You know, and they were incredibly well done.
I love Choke.
I think when you get to a certain point, people just trust you too much. Let's say for right now, Stephen King writes something. Hey, they just accept it because they trust him. They're not going to tell him, you know what, you should go do this chapter again. You should rewrite this chapter. One good example also was in music of Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney, in the early 70s and late 70s, he was very spotty. Even in the 80s, because nobody's going to tell him Paul McCartney, one of the greatest songwriters ever, maybe you should leave that song out and maybe rework at this part. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to tell him that. So, So what happened? There was one album that he did with Jeff Lynne. Jeff Lynne produced it, going back to ELO. Flaming Pie, I think it was. And Jeff Lynne produced it, and I guess Paul McCartney trusted him enough that Jeff Lynne said, maybe we should work on this part, do it this way, and the album was a great album, These well-established artists, whether they're authors, whether they're musicians, directors, actors, They need that other ear, but sometimes
it's funny. I mean, you mentioned Jeff Lynne because Jeff Lynne produced George Harrison's album Cloud Nine, which was a terrific album, absolutely. And he also produced Roy Orbison's final album, Mystery Girl. Which again was, I mean, in fact, Mystery Girl was actually produced by Bono. Was the album called Mystery Girl? I think it was, wasn't it?
Mystery Girl, I think that was produced by Jeff Lynne.
No, the whole album was produced by Jeff Lynne. Mystery Girl, sorry, it was written by Bono.
But, again, big
Jeff Lynne fan. He was pretty much has been the go-to producer for massive, massive stars. I mean, he was obviously the key people in the Traveling Wilburys. He's just been... and he's produced a couple of the yellow albums over the past.
Hey, you want to really be jealous, James? James, it doesn't make you really jealous.
Go on.
Are you ready for this?
Go on.
During the concert this past Tuesday, he brought in Danny Harrison, George's son, to sing with him, Handled with Care from the Traveling Wilburys album.
Oh, wow.
So, and he sounded just like George. He sounded just like his dad.
Really?
You know, so it was really a magical moment, you know. So
I can imagine that was just something else, yeah.
I just figured it out.
I
rubbed your nose in
it
a little bit.
Well, I'm going to keep an eye. He's got to come to Houston. I mean, they all come to Houston at some point. So hopefully I will go see him because I've got to see. Got to see Jeff Lynne live. I mean, just so you can't lord it over me, Carlos, to be honest.
Speaking of music,
and Christina, Alice Cooper is touring with the Hollywood Vampires with Johnny Depp and who's the fellow from Aerosmith?
Steve Tyler.
Joe Perry.
Yeah.
So that group is touring now too.
Awesome. I want to.
I know Xtina was an Alice Cooper fan. She told me all about her tattoo.
I do have a tattoo of Alice Cooper. Yeah.
Oh, you still have it? Yeah.
Not even I know about whereabouts is this tattoo, Xtina? Do tell.
Xtina and I have intimate conversations every week.
It seems like, yeah.
it's on my arm. It is. It's oh my gosh. When I got it done, and this was back when I was like 18 years old, the tattoo guy was like, "You're going to be in here, you know, within a year getting that covered up with a big eight ball." And nope, he's still there.
Good for you.
Yeah, I love it. So. I was going to say, before you leave us, Carlos, can we get, like, another song out of you? Just, you know, please.
She's got a pansies already.
Well, give me a couple of plugs, man. Come on. Hey, Xtina, have you read the first book yet?
No, I haven't. You know, James keeps me busy. So
you are missing out. If you love Nikki, you have to read that.
The first book is phenomenal.
That's where it all began.
Yeah.
I carry it around with me. I do. I carry it around with me.
It's not the same as reading it. But yeah, I mean, Carlos can be found on the Hellbound Books website and on Facebook. And where else are you, Carlos?
What's that?
Where are you? Do you have your own website?
Oh, no, I took my website down. We really got, you know, it's funny because, it is an investment and I wasn't getting enough activity, so I just put it down. You know, I just want to say to people who haven't read it yet, it is such a good book. It is so much more than a horror story. It's so much more than a vampire.
As we said earlier about, character building, and, you know, I don't think I've read a book with such well-rounded characters that you care about than Sangray and Sangray, the Wrong Side of Tomorrow. Nikki, I mean, I really felt, so at the end of the first book, felt so sorry for that. Everything he'd been through, and it was just like, all just happen to, like, and we've all had periods in our life like that where, like, you feel like life is just happening to you, you know? And that was Nicky. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much his story. It just all happened to him. And it was like, okay, maybe a couple of bad choices here and there, but it was almost like an innocent victim in his own life, which made it so tragic. But then again, it led to some wonderfully, darkly comedic moments. I mean, that's one thing I like. I guess, you know, I identify with, because everything I write has that vein of dark humor. I think Carlos and I are of the same ilk when it comes to that. We both like our dark humor.
Yeah. You want to have fun with your book too, especially if it's like you said, it can be so much of a downer with such of the things that happened to him. I really put myself into what and you know how actors do method acting. I do method writing. I really put myself in there when I'm writing the book, so that's why I have to put the humor in there. Otherwise, I might kill myself. But if you look at one of the things, like I took a picture the other day in front of the Paramount Theater where the climax of the new book takes place. And that's something that I do, you know, to make it real. I go to the locations and I take in the smells, I take in the sights, I look around. I really put myself in there because I want to be able to translate that to the page, you know, and it winds up being fun. There was a movie, I think I told you about this, it was a movie about Dickens writing a Christmas story a couple of years ago, you know, Scrooge story, and he's writing alone in his room, and then his wife walks into the room to disturb him about something. See, when he was writing, right, all of the characters from the book he was writing, Scrooge, Tiny Tim, remember, they were in the room with him, and then the wife walks in, and they disappear. And that's what it's like, man. A lot of people don't realize it, but you interrupt the writer, man. You take them out of that world completely.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
And it can take, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour to get back into it, yeah.
All right, you earned your song. Okay, all right, here we go.
Yay!
Before you choose me, take a look at yourself. Before you choose me, take a look at yourself. You say I've been buying other women's clothes. You've been talking to someone else. I called your mama for 3-4 nights ago. I called your mama by 3-4 nights ago. Your mama said, son, don't call my daughter no more. Before you accuse me, take a look at yourself. Before you accuse me, take a look at yourself. You said I've been buying other women's clothes. You've been taking money from someone else.
Woo! Yay! Thank you.
Awesome. We should do this every week. Have Carlos come on and sing for us.
I'm on. Yeah, awesome. We're just calling the James and Exceder and Carlos show.
There you go.
You guys are always a lot of fun, and it's always a pleasure listening to you. And by the way, it's always a pleasure working with you, and it's always a pleasure reading you as well.
Thank you. Likewise, sir. Always good. Always fun.
Definitely. I think that we are just about out of time for our show.
I wanted to make sure we're actually going to play out with a Carlos song as well. So
need to hog up your show.
It's been an absolute delight. This was our show. We wanted to do what we wanted to do, and you were it. So that's great. And it's been a great time. It's been a great time. But thank you so much for joining us, Carlos, on our self-indulgent show. We're going to call it.
We need to do
one at least every few months. I think just have us on it and. Shoot the
shit. I like that.
It's good.
Idea. Yeah,
we need
definitely.
To do that. So, Carlos, we're going to say goodnight. Thank you so much for joining us. And so I'm going to let Carlos say goodnight, Xtina, this week. Carlos, say goodnight, Xtina.
Well, goodnight, Xtina. I will see you. I will see you after the show.
You can talk tattoos until the wee hours. And it's
good night
from me. You fall.